Americans are no strangers to debt, but beyond credit card balances and car loans, they're also borrowing money from family members, and the relational fallout is costly. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, back in a moment with details.
Your email is your business, but if it's spied on, hacked, or intercepted, it can fall into the wrong hands. The solution is encryption, a high-tech way to scramble your data so no one can read it. For years, only the technical elite could use this powerful tool, until StartMail came along. StartMail not only lets you encrypt the email you send, it encrypts your entire account. Encryption. It's just one more way StartMail.com keeps you safe.
There's a secret $52 billion economy in the U.S., with much of it centered on debt between family members. In a J.G. Wentworth survey of over 1,200 people, more than half reported that they're in debt to a friend or a family member. Out of this group, another half say that borrowing money has drastically changed the dynamic of their relationship, with three-quarters saying they're no longer as close. So the next time a family member asks you for money, consider giving a gift instead of a loan. You're unlikely to get the money back either way, but giving a gift might strengthen the relationship instead of breeding resentment. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht for the private email service StartMail.
This is the Dr. Catherine Albrecht Show.
Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop. Call up an army against Babylon. Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop. Call up an army against Babylon. Wave your hand to encourage them. Wave your hand to encourage them as they march into the palaces of the high and mighty. I, the Lord, have dedicated these soldiers for this task. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger, and they will rejoice when I am exalted.
Hello, good afternoon. Catherine Albrecht here. Trying to figure out a sound issue. I have a very special guest today. Not the time to have this happening. There are three dots in preferences here. Let me see if I can fix that real quick so I can bring my guest up. Give me just one moment here. Device. And okay, hopefully that will do the trick. Do I want to keep these changes? Yes, I do. Save. Okay. All right. Many apologies there. Hopefully that was able to bring up the sound properly. I am delighted this hour. This is something I've been looking forward to ever since March, when I was appointed to the St. Clair County Mental Health Board of Directors for our entire county here in Michigan. I am joined today by pretty much the father of a whole field of understanding within the literature of mental health, physical health, and religion. Dr. Harold Koenig is my guest. He is a professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences. He's an associate professor of medicine. He is at Duke University Medical Center in Durham, North Carolina. But that barely does justice to the 50 books he's published, the hundreds and hundreds of academic articles, and the tremendous influence he has had in changing something really critical in our understanding of mental health care. And that understanding is that religion, far from needing to be kicked out, plays a really critical role. Welcome, Dr. Harold Koenig. It's so great to have you with me.
Thank you, Catherine. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
I'm delighted. So I have read so much of your material. I can't say I've read all 50 of your books, but I've certainly read a number of them. And the reason I wanted to invite you on the show, I'll give you a little bit of background, and then I want you to explain what has happened in psychiatry, psychology, and just our understanding, our scientific understanding. But I, in March of this year, was appointed to be a board member on our county community board of, St. Clair County Community Mental Health Authority. That is the governmental authority in charge of the mental health treatment and care for people all over this region. And next week, actually, I'm going to be traveling to Traverse City to participate in a statewide conference of similar people in these positions across the state of Michigan. And the reason I wanted to talk to you is because buried deep within the guidelines for our county and other counties is a very small sort of one single line that says that patients or clients' spiritual interests need to be addressed and are important. And yet I don't really see that happening. So when I was appointed, literally I was appointed on a Thursday night. The Friday morning, the next Friday morning, or the next day, I got up and I'm sitting at my computer, and I'm a very prayerful person. I am a believing Christian, and I believe that the Lord had put me in that position. I was praying and I sat down, and all of a sudden I just had this realization that there is a place for religion, not only within mental health care, but within governmental agencies that are providing mental health care. And long story short, that led me to your research and to the brand new, I think you're the cause of it. You were the instigating person who just really persevered and got this out there to say that no longer is religion a pariah that needs to be ignored and gotten rid of within mental health care, but it is actually critical and at the center. And I have just been blown away by, within literally the last 10 years, how much the field has changed and how that is now a recognized thing. So with that said, I'm delighted to have you on. And can you explain to us what your career has been about? You came in at a time when nobody wanted to hear this. You have been publishing and talking doing research endlessly, and things have now changed, and I think you're the reason. Can you explain or describe your experience in your career of making this change?
Well, Catherine, you're absolutely correct. When I got interested in this area about 40 years ago, there was very little interest and a lot of hostility with regard to talking about these topics in medicine and psychiatry. And most healthcare professionals, mental health professionals, were not trained to address these issues, and what training they did receive was describing religion as a neurosis that contributed to mental health problems, and that the best way to proceed would be to basically get rid of it and start rationally working through your problems. And, you know, I was seeing something quite different, that people seem to be coping very well using their religious faith to help them, give them meaning and purpose and a sense, you know, that there was more to life than just our physical bodies. So that's kind of how I got started.
Now, did you, when you first made this realization and began to do research, what was the response?
Well, you know, the response was pretty, from my colleagues, it was quite negative. But from the media, you know, it got a lot of attention on all of the major news networks, CBS, NBC, CNN, and they came to Durham, North Carolina to figure out what were the findings, what did they mean, and of course, many viewers, given that the vast majority of our country is religious, viewers were very interested in this. So people in the general population really get it, but those in the mental health professional haven't quite got it yet.
And they seem to be getting it. I definitely, before we end this hour, I want to talk about the number of conferences, the conferences at Harvard, all just everywhere I look, I'm seeing conferences to train or retrain, as the case may be, clinicians in understanding that it's not something we need to shy away from. It's actually something we need to emphasize. Let me ask you about just the history of the field of psychiatry and of mental health care in this country and around the world. How did we get to the place where religion, which, as you pointed out, the majority of people in the United States, at least, and indeed around the globe, have religious beliefs. How did religion come to be viewed as a pathology that needed to be stamped out?
Well, it kind of began with Sigmund Freud. So Dr. Freud, of course, one of the founders of modern psychiatry and mental health care, had some very negative experiences as a young boy with regard to religion. He had initially been quite interested in studying religion and the Bible. He was Jewish. But then he had some negative experiences, and consequently, he began to write about the negative aspects of religion, that religion was the universal obsessional neurosis of humanity, and that the less religious that people were, the mentally healthier they would be. So his whole technique of psychoanalysis and all of that was designed to change people's beliefs and practices such that they were relying more on rationally working through their problems rather than praying or believing in a God or reading scriptures. Instead, they were to rationally work through their problems. And of course, the kinds of people that Freud saw were people with mental illness. So, yes, they may have been using their religion in a neurotic way.
I see. All right. Well, this is fascinating. Dr. Harold Koenig is my guest. We're talking about religion and mental health. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Why are most email programs free? Companies use them as bait to lure people into their system so they can scan their data and sell them to advertisers. It's like a hotel giving out free rooms so they can film people sleeping and then sell the video. You'd never agree to that. StartMail restores your privacy. No one but you sees your sensitive data, and it costs less than a postage stamp a week. StartMail.com. It's email you can trust. Your email is your business. But if it's spied on, hacked, or intercepted, it can fall into the wrong hands. The solution is encryption, a high-tech way to scramble your data so no one can read it. For years, only the technical elite could use this powerful tool, until StartMail came along. StartMail not only lets you encrypt the email you send, it encrypts your entire account. Encryption. It's just one more way StartMail.com keeps you safe.
I'm so excited to have Dr. Harold Koenig. He is the towering intellect in this field who has brought religion back into the public sphere, into science, into mental health, into healthcare generally. Thank you so much, first of all. I'm fascinated. I want to hear the rest, but I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart as an American Christian, a person of deep faith. How wonderful it is to be able to not only say my faith has helped me, but that science backs me up. So thank you so much. I know I'm one of many millions of people who have thanked you for that, but I really am grateful.
It's a wonderful compliment. Thank you, Catherine.
Well, so let me let you continue. We were talking about Sigmund Freud. And actually, my pro seminar, I have a doctorate in developmental psychology from Harvard, and at my pro seminar year, my first year, for people who don't know what that is, they kind of throw a group of us together and teach us a whole lot about one thing. And our particular year was to learn about Freud and Breuer. And so I spent an entire year with a whole lot of other graduate students learning his philosophies, his thoughts, and many ways in which he shaped the entire field that later turned out to be problematic, to not have been correct. The particular issue that we were talking about, and Carol Gilligan was one of the people teaching my pro seminar, was that Sigmund Freud had encountered women who were claiming to have been sexually abused, and at first he believed them, but then over time he had so many of them, so many people were reporting this, that he said it must be a delusion, and then he came up with the Oedipus complex, the electric, you know, and basically said this is just a fantasy, this is just a desire people have. And it has taken decades, literally almost a century, to come to the point where we've said, no, actually there really is a lot of abuse going on. And that did people a huge disservice. I think at the same time that people were being told, no, we don't want to listen to your stories of abuse, they were also being told, and you do not have religion to turn to. You know, that's just a crutch. You're going to have to deal with this through some other means that really just didn't work. So let's dive right into the good things that your research and the research that you've inspired others to do has shown for the positive value of religion and the thing that we lost and we're now getting back.
Yes. So, you know, the initial work that I began doing was looking at the role that religion plays in coping with medical illness. So that's an area that I was studying. I was looking at depression in the medically ill and documenting the rates and treatments, etc., and I would ask people how they were coping with their medical conditions, their stroke, cancer, heart disease, surgery, etc., and I repeatedly, people express their religious faith, and those people who were depending on their faith seemed to be doing better, those who were not depending on their faith. So that kind of began, so I started to look, okay, well, let's measure rates of well-being, psychological well-being, happiness, and also let's look at depression, and let's look at substance use disorders, and what role might religion play in any of those. So that began a series of studies documenting that religious people are, in 80% of the existing research, are simply happier. They have greater psychological well-being. They are less likely to become depressed, and if they do, then they recover more quickly from depression. And now, religiously integrated psychotherapies have been developed that have been shown to have a large effect on depressive symptoms in those, you know, who are experiencing emotional problems. Again, acting primarily as a coping behavior to make sense of these problems and to integrate them into their lives and into their worldview, which religion provides people.
Now, you have also, there is plentiful research that this is not just an objective experience of people feeling better, but there are actual brain scans, MRI scans, showing significant differences in the brains between those who do and do not practice religious faith. Can you talk about that?
Yes. Dr. Lisa Miller at Columbia University has done a study looking at structural MRI scans of the brain of individuals at high risk for depression. So these are individuals whose parents were depressed, having a major depression, and they possess the genetic loading for depression. So when they did the MRI, the structural MRI scans of the brains of those who indicated that religion was either very important or was not important at all, they noticed there were differences in their brain structure. Among those who indicated that religion was very important in their lives, their brains were actually significantly larger. The cerebral cortex overall was about 1 millimeter larger than those who indicated that religion was not important at all in their lives. Now, that research, although it doesn't prove that religion actually preserves the brain or actually causes the brain to enlarge among those at high risk for depression, it is consistent with that finding. And that actually makes a lot of physiological sense, because cortisol, which goes up when people experience depression, causes brain shrinkage. And if you have a powerful coping behavior, then that cortisol levels are going to be relatively low, because you're coping and not experiencing as much depression. And if you've got lower cortisol levels, then your brains are not going to be shrinking from the effects of cortisol on the brain. And so that is that was published in, I believe it was JAMA Psychiatry, back about 12 to 15 years ago.
I think it was 2014. I was just looking at that study, actually, and your commentary on that study was that that was the first time that that journal had published such a thing, that they had been always strictly objective and only focused on things that did not veer into the realm of the social sciences or into the realm of religion. So that was pretty groundbreaking, wasn't it?
It was, and the previous time that they had ever, used to be called the Archives of General Psychiatry. The previous time was in 1969, when they talked about, there was a review article about all of the negative effects that religion was having on psychiatric illness. And, but this one was the first one that actually showed a positive effect. And of course, it was well designed. It was Columbia University, a prominent research group there. So, yeah, it was pretty neat.
So, now mentioning the negatives, how is it that psychiatry believed for so many decades that in these negative effects, are there negative and positive effects? What is the balance? How does that work?
Well, part of it, well, certainly there are negative effects of religion. You know, we have wars. We've had wars for as long as humans have been on the planet that have been justified on religious grounds. People kill and manipulate, control others using their religious beliefs because it's such a powerful factor. Again, in terms of the negative effects, first of all, when people experience severe pain and suffering, they turn to their religious faith. And so that's what psychiatrists are seeing and mental health care. They're seeing people who are suffering greatly with depression and anxiety and other mental health problems grasping onto their religious faith. And what they are concluding is that it's the religion that's causing the problem. But that's not the case. It's the problem that is causing people to turn to religion to make sense of and bring comfort to them. So that's the major issue. Now, when people are experiencing religious struggles, that can generate negative emotions. When they feel that they're being punished by God, or that God doesn't love them or can't make a difference in their lives, or they feel deserted by their church or synagogue or mosque, then there are problems that we were able to show that it shortens longevity if you have these religious struggles and they're not addressed. So people live about, you know, several years less because they're struggling, and that's creating emotional distress, and that's affecting their lifespan.
And there is a very rich vein of literature that I've been looking into, which is addressing spiritual problems. It's evidence-based, and it does not, you know, for clinicians or agencies that are not quite ready to go to say, hey, religion, the concept of addressing spiritual struggles or spiritual difficulties is, I think, much of what you're talking about, that there's something between you and your relationship with God that is not working correctly or not feeling comfortable or is putting you into a state of stress. I wanted to go back to what you had said earlier about people who were experiencing a lot of stress having a correlation with high levels of religion. That would be like saying people who take aspirin or people who take pain relievers have a high level of pain. And the pain relievers are causing the pain when in reality you're seeing the correlation because the pain is causing you to seek it out.
It's an excellent illustration, just like people taking antidepressants, it's the antidepressants that's causing the depression. No.
Right.
It's the depression causing the need for antidepressants.
Well, that makes absolutely perfect sense. Now, you have so much, I could talk to you for hours. There's so many things for us to talk about. When we come back after this break, I want you to address what was in the beginning of your handbook of religion and mental health. You devote a whole section in there to the discussion of the difference between spirituality and religion. And because I just mentioned resolving spiritual conflicts, I want to get your thoughts on that. They're very interesting. All right. Thank you. And we'll be right back with Dr. Harold Koenig. He is pretty much the world's leading expert. Stay tuned.
Is your email box overrun with spam? With a StartMail account, you'll never have to give your real email address to a stranger again. Online shopping, newsletter subscriptions, getting that 30% off coupon, they all need your email address. But with StartMail, you can invent new addresses or aliases linked to your inbox behind the scenes and give those out to people while keeping your real address hidden. It's just one more protection from StartMail.com.
Red alert, Yahoo users. You've fallen in a trap that could ruin your life if you keep using Yahoo.
You consent to sharing all data in your email account with our AI providers, and you grant us a perpetual license to use, display, publish, and publicly distribute your content in any media known now or in the future, and to let other users access and distribute it as well.
Yikes! It's time to switch to StartMail, the only email that's AI-free and private by design. StartMail.com. Use promo code JD.
When I dwell in the shelter, the shadow of Shaddai, of the Almighty, I'll say my refuge, my fortress, my God in whom I trust, you will deliver me. Every hidden trap, deadly is disease, you will be my shield, you will cover. Wrap around me under feathers of majesty. I know that I'm perfectly safe under your wings.
Hey, we're back. The bumper music, of course, is taken from Scripture. All right. Catherine Albrecht here. I am visiting this hour. We're privileged to have as our guest this hour, Dr. Harold Koenig. He is the person who I really think almost single-handedly restored sanity to mental health care, to psychiatry, to the entire psychiatric and psychological academic world in demonstrating with hard science that there is tremendous value in religion, and that by stripping it away, we really left people without this critical and crucial resource. Dr. Koenig, before the break, I had mentioned the chapter that you wrote that I found just fascinating about the difference between spirituality and religion. These days, if you ask somebody, do you believe in God? Are you a Christian? Or you will frequently get the answer, oh, well, I'm spiritual. I'm a spiritual person. And it feels kind of like what does that even mean? can you talk to us about the studies that were done on spirituality, on what really that is or isn't, and how it differs from religion?
Yes, Catherine. So there are a couple of different self-descriptors out there. One is people describe themselves as spiritual. Many describe themselves as both spiritual and religious, and others might describe themselves as spiritual but not religious. So there's a history here with regard to the word spirituality and spiritual. Through much of our human history, those who described themselves as spiritual were a subset of deeply religious people whose lives were centered on their religious faith. We're talking about Gandhi, the Buddha, the Prophet Muhammad, Jesus, or the clergy. The clergy were often called spiritual. But the word spirituality has expanded in the last 20 to 30 years to include those, not only those who are deeply religious, but those who are religious at all, and those who are not religious, one single bit, including the total secular individuals who describe themselves as spiritual but not religious. And so, the big question is being spiritual but not religious, does that have health benefits? That's the question. Now, those who are spiritual but not religious, there is a bit of a tendency to reject the religious laws and rules and thou shalt nots. And there is a tendency to kind of develop one's own spirituality that may be very personal and may have to do largely with nature or just with connecting with something perhaps outside of themselves or within themselves. So the big question is, does that form of spirituality have health benefits? And what research has been done in the United Kingdom and the United States, those who are spiritual but not religious do not have the psychological, social, and physical health benefits that those who describe themselves as both spiritual and religious. So that's basically what the research is showing. So, a lot of the rules and regulations that many people would like not to believe in and not abide with, those are the factors that enhance mental and physical health over the long term. Those are exactly the factors, the ones that people don't want to obey. The moral values, the ethical values, all of these ways of living life that religions promote, loving others, being forgiving, being generous, being grateful, loving God, loving your neighbor, being humble, being responsible, all of these things create health benefits. And not surprisingly so, since I believe that, our maker knows how he made us and knows how we can live the best possible life because he loves us and he wants us to live that wonderful life. And so he's given us some rules to abide by. It's just that we just don't do them. And consequently,
it's kind of like
we end up...
It's like the maintenance guide for your car, right? resent that you're telling me to change the oil. Who are you to tell me I need to change my spark plugs and fill my tires and put gas in the tank? Who are you to tell me that? I'm with you. I'm with
you
completely.
Good point. 100%. That's exactly the point I'm making.
Wow. Now, let me ask you, because the big question on everyone's mind in the U.S. right now is, what in the heck has happened to our country? The last, I was born in the 60s. I have watched the country go from pretty libertine 1970s to rampant divorce in the 80s. My parents got divorced. Everybody just abandoning Gen X, that's my generation, as latchkey kids, as they went off and, you know, were swingers and going to discos and doing who knows what. And now we're in this era where we've got these tech bro billionaires who are not giving anything back. There's no philanthropy that I can see. And it feels like the country is just falling apart, and there feels as though there is a moral core. Do you believe that the reduction in religion in this country, and it was pretty systematically stripped away throughout the 50s and 60s and has continued apace ever since, that removal of that core source of mental health has led to some of the problems that we're experiencing? What is your view of society today?
Yeah, Catherine, I think you've got it. You've hit the nail on the head. Basically, you know, there's sky-high rates of substance abuse, depression, anxiety, lack of happiness in our country, especially among young people who are the least religious of the entire population. Only about two-thirds of young adults ages 18 to, I don't know, 36 maybe, even believe in God, let alone are involved in a faith community or are living a life based on religious beliefs. So this decline in religious involvement, it's people don't have a purpose in their lives. What is the purpose of your life ultimately? Why are you here? Where did you come from? Where are you going? Are we just random events in the eternal space of time, just with no meaning, no purpose other than to just experience pleasure? That's what Freud said. Freud said that really the only meaning and purpose in life is to experience pleasure. And outside of that, life has no ultimate meaning and purpose. But religion says differently. It says, yes, there is a plan. You can be part of that plan. Your life has meaning and purpose. You're here for a reason. And there's a glorious life afterwards, that God has for you. After you get through this life here, if you could just behave yourself, basically. And, that's kind of the, I do think, as you said, that these rampant health issues, this was long before the COVID-19. This was happening. This was starting to, speed up all of these mental health issues, in 2007, 16 to 18. And then the COVID-19 pandemic came and it made things a little worse. But things have continued to get worse despite the pandemic being over. And I do think it's because of a decline in religious involvement, lack of religious beliefs, not having any, unchanging moral standards by which to live your life by. So you can live however you want to. And as you go on your own path, it's a pretty treacherous journey. I mean, it may be hard to live a moral and ethical life, but it's a lot more difficult to be on your own with no help whatsoever to get through this life. There's just too much coming at us.
Yeah, and young people, of course, they're getting a lot of their values or their direction from, of all horrible places, from social media. Does not have their best interest at heart and is designed to get more clicks and more money, and there's a horrible fallout from that. I have had a dear member of my own family commit suicide because as a teenager he was being egged on and encouraged to do so through social media. Had that young man been attending church, had he been in a community of people who were giving him hope and a purpose and meaning and a reason to live, he would not have fallen victim to that. I believe that he would have been able to overcome it. All right, well,
I'm so bummed that we don't have more time. We have one more segment with Dr. Harold Koenig. He is the probably the world's leading expert. I'm so delighted he's on my show in religion and mental health. He's at Duke University, and we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
I've been hearing a lot about the LifeWave patches, and they sound amazing. And I'm thinking I want to try them for myself. But can you tell me how they work?
You wear the patch, which is about the size of a quarter, 12 hours a day, 12 on, 12 off. And the patch uses your body's own light and energy and copper peptides to reactivate the dormant stem cells in your body. Once a stem cell has been reactivated, it can be used by any of the cells in your body that need it, creating a healing and growth process you haven't experienced since your youth. So in a nutshell, this is how the LifeWave X39 patch works.
You can purchase the LifeWave patches by going to AmericasFreedomNetwork.com, then click on the Natural Health Products button at the top of the page. That's AmericasFreedomNetwork.com.
Look, this product works, and you've got nothing to lose because there's a 100% money-back guarantee.
That's AmericasFreedomNetwork.com.
Night watchman, how long till daybreak? Night watchman, how long till daybreak? How long will this night last? How long will this night last? Morning's coming, morning's coming, but for now, it's still night.
Hey, we're back for our final segment with Dr. Harold Koenig, K-O-E-N-I-G. Dr. Koenig, where can people find more information about this? We have listeners who probably work in the mental health arena and are interested in learning more about this. How can they access your information? Also, just members of the public who are saying, hang on a second, I haven't been hearing this. How can I get in on the benefits and learn more about them?
So we have a website, the Duke University's Spirituality, Theology, and Health Center. So the Center for Spirituality, Theology, and Health at Duke University. And we've got lots of different workshops and programs and even an e-newsletter you can sign up for and free stuff that you can download if you're interested in this area. So I would encourage people to go to that website. Just Google it. Duke University Center for Spirituality, Theology, and Health.
Awesome. I just posted a link to that website both on our YouTube live stream chat, so people can find it there. And also, if you go to my website at Katherine-Albrecht.com and you click on the live chat, we have the live chat window open, and I posted that link in there as well. So let me ask you this. This is a personal question for for my own purposes. I am going to Traverse City, not next week, but I guess it'll be a week from, in about a week, I will be there. I am going to be talking to people who work in mental health, board members, CEOs, you know, people at the top of mental health across my home state of Michigan. How can I begin to introduce this information into the state, into the minds and the hearts of people who truly want to do the best and help the members of the public who are struggling so much with modern life, with mental illness, with depression, with anxiety? Our numbers are going up. We have just a steady stream of people coming in for help. And I believe that this could be a tremendous benefit for them. As someone who was newly appointed to the board, what information can I bring? What can I bring to my own board? What can I bring to the CEO of our county? What can I bring to the state level when I'm at a dinner or a cocktail party talking to other people in positions of influence across the state? How can I open up the conversation? And what would you do in my situation if you wanted to really just break open the barriers and begin letting this good information flow?
So first of all, I would focus on spirituality and health. Spirituality, a broad spirituality that includes those who are religious and those who are not religious. So I would focus on that, but I would bring a copy of the Handbook of Religion and Health, third edition, which is over 1,100 pages. It was written, I'm the first author, but my co-authors are Tyler Vanderweel at the Harvard School of Public Health and John Petit at Harvard Medical School Department of Psychiatry. So this is a 2024 book. I took it to the White House when I was there a couple of months ago, and it has the research, and it's across all different religious groups. It's not just one group. We're not endorsing a particular religion. It's across all different religious groups, and even those who are not particularly religious. It has information for those individuals as well. So, again, keep it broad. Again, the government can't be endorsing a religion, so you know, they can support people's current religious beliefs. That's what they can do. They can support people's, and many people in Michigan are going to be religious, believe me. If they're not Christian, they're going to be Muslim. There are probably going to be a number of Jews, as well as some Buddhists and Hindus. So these people, you know, supporting their religious beliefs, and you know, that's what the government, I think, should do. It should make it easier for people to be religious and not penalize people for being religious. You know, anyway, the handbook has, in the last chapter, recommendations, a series of recommendations for the government, policy issues. I would read those recommendations and then maybe put it in a gentle way. You're a bit of a newcomer there, so I wouldn't just dive in there, you know, too aggressive. But I would do it in a very kind and, you know, nice way. But let them know about the information and what might be recommended and why.
I think I may be buying 11 copies of the Handbook of Religion and Health. I already have my own, but I may be handing those out to my fellow board members just to get them informed, let them read the research firsthand so they know what you've been working on and what the recommendations are. And I think, you know, in so many areas, it is difficult for government to keep pace with the rate of change within academic research, within technology. The world is moving very quickly. How long would you say that this new perspective, which is the cutting edge perspective, really, how long would you say that this new perspective that religion and spirituality need to come back into mental health care, how long has that been the prevailing view among academics?
Well, I think particularly in the last 5 years, since there has been a flurry of research coming out of the Harvard School of Public Health. I think this is some of the best research that's ever been done. It's longitudinal, thousands and thousands of people followed over time. It's published in some of the best academic journals in psychiatry, in internal medicine, in the world, in epidemiology, public health. I mean, really, the research is just mounting to a point where you cannot continue to ignore it, which is what's been done. There's not really been any critique about it. It's just been ignored. And if you're considering a profession that consider itself scientific, you can't just ignore scientific evidence.
That's the tremendous, that's the wonderful part, is that the evidence is now speaking for itself, and it's overwhelming. Yeah, it's just overwhelming. So I feel a little bit better that I somehow missed this.
that it's only been about 5 years. I just became aware of it literally the morning after, the Friday morning after the Thursday I was appointed to the board. And I just felt the Lord nudging me and saying, check something out, take a look, you're going to be amazed. And I was blown away. I was just blown away. And I can't tell you what an honor it is that the person who made all of that happen is right here on my radio program. So thank you so much for joining me. In the last couple minutes we have, I want to talk about a series of steps that you, I think it's a 14-week talk-oriented program, communication-based therapy, that you have put together some guidelines on. Can you tell us just briefly what that is, where to find it, and if people want to incorporate that or follow that series of steps?
Now, tell me a little bit more about what you're referring to. Just give me a little bit more information about it.
I wish I had the screen up in front of me, but it was a series of steps, I want to say communication-based therapy or talk-based therapy, of a series that this was one of the slides on one of your presentations that talked about how clinicians and therapists can actually incorporate a client's religious beliefs. And it had to do with focusing on positive scripture. Yeah.
I got you. So, well, one thing is that mental health professionals should take a spiritual history. And we've got a 15-item spiritual history that healthcare professionals can take. That is mental health care professionals. We also have an abbreviated 4-to-5-item spiritual history that medical providers can administer to just get a sense of if the patient uses their religion or their spirituality to help them to cope, and if they have any spiritual needs related to illness, and if they have any beliefs that might conflict with the medical or psychiatric treatments. Very basic things to engage in conversation with patients about, and then referring them out to a chaplain or pastoral care provider to address any of those spiritual needs, again, related to their health. So, and, you know, in terms of just people out there, what do? Well, you keep an open mind to this if you're not already engaged. If you're engaged in a faith community and you're active and you're praying and you're studying your scriptures and, you know, you've got a connection with God, keep it up. Keep it up and spend more time doing it. And you'll get many rewards from it.
I love it. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing this information. It's so wonderful to be able to just throw off the shackles of these false beliefs that we were not allowed to embrace our religion. Thank you once again so much for coming on the program.
Thank you, Catherine, for having me on. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you. That was Dr. Harold Koenig, MD. Spirituality and health.duke.edu. We'll post all the links on the YouTube description and on my website in the radio archives. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. Remember, there is value in your faith. All right, stay faithful. Bless you all. Thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye.